It is a Wednesday morning broadcast. We promised you an election analysis in the 7 o'clock hour. And, of course, Jake Novak, no one does it better than he does, longtime news producer, commentator, and a million other great titles when it comes to the area of media and politics. And he is with us live via telephone on this Wednesday morning. Jake Novak, a pleasure to welcome you back to JM in the AM.
Thank you so much. I try to be as fair and things like that with my analysis, and I think I came through pretty well. But I don't pretend to be unbiased, because no human being is unbiased. And I'm very, very pleased with the election results, not only because the fact that they proved me right is the least of the reasons why, but I think all your listeners deserve to know where I'm coming from on that, just to be fair.
Are you going to hit the exact number of your prediction? Because you actually made public a prediction of electoral votes for each side. Are you going to hit that number exactly in the end?
Yeah, it looks like it. I said 312 to 226, and it looks like it's going to be that.
Did you take into account a split in Maine and Nebraska?
Yes.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I 312 to 226 looked pretty clear to me from about 3 weeks ago. I think it was about a week ago or so. I spoke with you and gave you the number. I put it on my social media feeds and the private texts and things like that. I don't see him exceeding that. You know, there are some people who are holding out hope for, but there's really nothing else that's toss up. The toss ups are going to go his way.
Right.
There's not enough votes in the U-Haul trucks to overturn Michigan and Arizona right now, and those are really the only two we're waiting for.
It's funny, because I said to you that I don't see a path where he could possibly win all seven swing states, and look what he did. He won all seven swing states. Now, okay, I have so much to ask you about, and obviously I need some validation in terms of what I was feeling last night, because you know I always say that politics is the best spectator sport, and a night like last night is made for people like me, you know. So
sure.
When did I think it all turned? When did I think, sitting there watching all these results, all of a sudden, when did I realize, oh my gosh, it looks like he's on his way to victory? And that was when they announced the margins with which he led in both Georgia and Ohio. And I said, oh my gosh, if he is romping the way it looks like he's romping in those two states, this really could have a carryover everywhere. And sure enough, of course, it did. Everything trended that way the rest of the night. And, you know, that led to so many questions about this whole campaign. And how we got here to this point. And by the way, I believe, and I don't know if as a news junkie you'd agree exactly with this, but I think the reaction that this morning is going to be so much more tempered than it was 8 years ago, because the victory was so overwhelming. In other words, you know, when you lose a baseball game in the bottom of the ninth, you can't sleep all night. When you lose 13-0, you know, you're resigned to the fact that we just took a real whooping, so to speak. And, you know, I think that that's what happened. You agree with that the reaction is going to be much more tempered because it was such an overwhelming victory?
And yes, and because he also has won the popular vote by what looks to be something close to 5 million, if not more, votes. That's very, very important. You know, that what you talked about at the beginning there about, you know, how these margins were showing big numbers in states that he was pretty much expected to win, but then, you know, they carried over elsewhere. That's a very important factor. You know, I really love studying election results to tell us what one state or even sometimes one district tells us about the rest of the country. And it's been a lousy 4 years for me because I can't trust anything I see from 2020. And that's not a partisan statement. It just didn't look right to me. And I felt like, boy, this is one election I'm never going to be able to study. And sure enough, we're back. So I'm very encouraged by the fact that, you know, in American history, when certain states and districts go a certain way, they are indicative of the rest of the country. And except for 2020, that's always been true. So we saw, you're right. I mean, we saw places like Florida, which is no longer.
Oh my gosh.
We knew that Trump was going to win it.
Overwhelming, by
so much.
You win it by a million votes.
And I knew that there were a lot of people who had moved to Florida over the last 3 years.
But
and so
still,
I was telling everybody, like, you can't, right.
If she was depending on the minority vote, if she was depending on the African-American vote, if she was depending on the female vote, unless, again, the female one, you know, the final numbers, you know, prove me wrong, she wasn't able to really grasp, you know, an overwhelming number in any of those categories.
Right. And, you know, it's just, look, we don't want a country. I mean, we have we're not the headline this morning won't be as much about our divided country when you have someone who won the popular vote by 5 million votes and won more electoral college votes than he did in 2016. It certainly is still true, and people can still talk about it, but the writing is on that wall very clearly. That's very, very important. I'm happy for that as much as I am anything this morning, that there is some clarity there. And
this is as close as we're going to get to those who wanted Bernie versus Trump so that the country could decide what direction they want to go. And this is the closest we'd have to that. And sure enough, obviously, he came out victorious.
That's right. And it's look, the other secondary story for people like me and probably some other folks is there actually is something, though, very disturbing about this morning's numbers. Malcolm, we're going to have almost 14 million fewer votes cast in this presidential election than 2020.
Wow.
And I'm sorry. I'm sorry I say this because I do believe in moving on. I don't believe in spiking the football, but someone needs to go to jail. Okay. Someone needs to go to jail. Now, the 2020 election, had it been anything less than 7 or 6 million fewer votes cast, I think I could have looked the other way. But 14 million? I mean, there was obviously such massive fraud in 2020 and such a massive crime committed on the American public and on our democracy. I believe, now, I don't know, I can't predict whether somebody will, but somebody should go to jail over the 2020 election based on what we've seen. I mean, what are you going to tell me, that those 14 million people forgot to vote, didn't come out this time? No, they were never really there in the first place.
Could it be they were underwhelmed by both candidates? Because, you know, back against the wall, my statement has been that neither was really qualified to be our next president. So could it be that a lot of people just fell out of favor with a good chunk of the American public?
No, as easy as it was to cast a vote in 2020, it was easier from a physical and mental standpoint to cast a vote in 2024. It was easier this time. There was much more early voting. There was still mail-in voting if you wanted it anywhere.
Yeah, and if in fact we point to COVID as one of the, you know, most clever, a clever cover for nefarious activity, then obviously, you know. Okay, but I just, for the record, that's your point of view. I've never gone down the, you know, there was cheating route.
I don't believe in machine fraud or anything. I'm just saying clearly there was massive vote inflation in the last election.
Right.
That's a serious crime. Whether anyone will be punished for it or not, I don't know. I believe someone should. That's, to me, a sad commentary on an otherwise happy day for American clarity.
Jake Novak is with us. Okay, a couple of things now in retrospect. Okay, you saw the result from last night, and you predicted the exact number. Now tell me about some of the things that happened and now how you think about them in light of last night's outcome. The decision, and it was a concerted decision, to replace Joe Biden with Kamala Harris. Do you suspect now he, meaning Biden, would have done better? Do you suspect it would have been a similar result? What did you think now, in retrospect, 2020 vision of that decision?
Well, I think that there are two key dates when Donald Trump won this election, and they're not November 5th. The first key date is January 21st, 2021. Sorry, 2023. After the Democrats survived the red wave and only lost the House and kept the Senate, that would have been a great time for Joe Biden to announce he was not running for a second term after that new Congress was sworn in on, January 20, the first day of the third year of his term. That would have been a really good time.
Right.
The fact that he didn't do that meant that they were stuck with him until for the time being. And then the second day that they lost the election was June 27th, 2024, when he performed so badly in that debate that they had to get rid of him. But they were stuck at that point. I think that there was no other choice for them, even though she was a terrible candidate, but to go with Kamala Harris. Otherwise, they would have had a massive civil war within their party. Because they would probably have chosen a white person, and they would have had a racial issue with the far left regressives in the party. She was the choice that was the most shalom bayit that they could possibly get. She wasn't their best choice to win, but she was a shalom bayit choice to make.
Now,
and that's when they were stuck with her.
Now that's interesting, and I don't think anybody listening now, well, maybe on the second one, people have thought of that. I don't think the Hamonam thought of the January 21st or 20th of 2023. But the second one, certainly there are those who would agree with you. But what about the date when everyone on that Saturday night turned to each other and said he just won the election. I'm referring, of course, to July 13th, 2024. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's interesting. For a week or two, many people did feel, oh, you know, now he won the election. He survived the assassination attempt, and now he won the election. And then, as time went on, I think people forgot about the fact that he was actually shot and hurt, and that other people were killed in the killed and injured, I should say, in that episode. So, what do you think now about those who said on July 13th he just won the election?
Well, that was when people realized it, but it was June 27th, and the numbers were so trending in his favor leading up to that July 13th.
That the assassination attempt was almost irrelevant, you're saying?
It wasn't irrelevant. It put a stamp on it, and it solidified something which could have started to trend in another way.
Right.
And I believe that the entire election post June 27th, including the assassination, including the Kamala Harris's name, was statistical noise.
Right.
Yes, thank God.
Right.
Was statistical noise. Was basically, and understandably so, this is not a dig at pollsters. This is not a dig at human beings. To have a new name inserted into an election is a difficult thing to digest for anyone normal. And having an assassination attempt like that is also a difficult thing to digest for anyone normal. But it was won on June 27th there was such a bad debate. And by the way, that was also a very, very good night for Jewish people in America, our fellow Jews, because it became the night – because we were seeing a trend leading up to June 27th where support for Israel and the Jewish community in this country was starting to get blamed for Biden's weaknesses. And when he decided to shoot himself in the foot without anybody doing it for him, that was a good night for Jews in America. They're going to start to blame some Jewish voters against this. But this is such a clear victory. I think that we also won on that score as well, because there's not that many of us out there to have tipped it the way it happened.
Yeah, someone pointed that out to me, and I think you're right. You know, what's the best thing for the Jews? I think I think most historians would say better a major victory than a very, very tight race. And obviously, go back to 2000, we know what the Jewish community in Florida I don't want to say they were blamed or targeted, but they were certainly in the conversation about how that election ended up going. Jake Novak is with us. Now, how do you explain political survival, the lawsuits, the impeachments, the trials, all this stuff that he went through? And I don't know, what would you say, that the American people didn't care about that, or policy over, you know, over, you know, these policy over personal? Like, you look back at that aspect of it, and what do you think?
Well, it's a truly indicative of how much there's a significant percentage of this population that does not trust the government and its institutions. And there's a significant part of the government and the institutions and the political class that doesn't realize this. One of my pet peeves about the political class and academia in America when it comes to their discussions of the American electorate is that for 50 years, they've been telling us that the American public is mostly apathetic. Right. They couldn't be more wrong. The American public is alienated. There's a huge difference between alienation and apathy. And that is very, very important to understand that, you know, I grew up mostly in the South. I didn't come to New York until high school time. I grew up in a military town in Norfolk, Virginia. And you're not going to tell me that the recently retired lieutenant commanders, captains, and chief petty officers in my neighborhood who weren't voting were apathetic. These people put their lives on the line for the country. They were very well versed in the issues of the day. And this is a good sign that, well, you know, a clear sign that the judiciary in this country, the elected officials in this country are not respected, and they haven't earned that respect. It doesn't mean that we have to treat them with disrespect, but it means that we do not have to believe the things they say and their institutions. And of course, I don't know if they're going to learn this lesson. I tried to make this clear in 2016 after Donald Trump won. The first editorial I wrote on election the day after the election was, do not blame this on racism. Do not blame this on hatred. Realize that these people are quite astute. We know what the problems are in this country, and they've chosen something different. You can say it's the wrong choice, but it's not. But it was a conscious choice. And be interested. I'd be very interested to see how much that obvious narrative, which I think is obviously true, is pushed back on this morning and going forward.
And how flawed is the strategy to have generals and other staff members who worked for Trump to get out there calling him fascist, Hitler, racist, et cetera, et cetera?
it's tremendously flawed. It's also dangerous. We don't want to become like Europe, where anti-Semitism and calling people fascists is the political football of the day. You know, the way that you attack your opponents in Russia or Ukraine is you do anti-Semitic things and then you blame your opponent of being an anti-Semite. That's right. Been politics in that part of the world since the time of the Tsar. It's not unusual. And I don't want that coming to the United States. Obviously, it's here, but hopefully this loss by Harris and the Democrats will end this trend. This is an ugly fad I don't want to see continue.
By the way, political fan Nahum Siegel needs to know if he's right or not, because you know all the electoral maps by heart. Five elections in a row, if I'm not mistaken, starting with Ronald Reagan in 1980. I think it was five elections in a row where the Republican, or the winner, I think they were all Republican in the next five elections, won all 11 southern states. Am I right that once Clinton broke that, that this is the first time that a Republican has now won all 11 southern states?
So you mean 80, 84, 88? I mean, well, then it would be... I'm trying to think what five in the row.
You know what I'm thinking of? What I might be thinking of is that prior to Reagan, those other two elections prior to Reagan, also the Republican won all 11.
Because in 76, Jimmy Carter won.
Oh, right. He was a Southerner. So I'm not sure what I'm thinking of, but I know there was a streak where all 11 Southern states went the Republican way, and Clinton was able to break that. Is this the first time now that since Clinton?
What you're thinking is the states that were in the Confederacy. So there were like states like Florida that weren't in the, you know, because they, I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't think it's probably some microcosm of the southern states and not all of them.
Because when I saw that map last night, the overwhelming redness of the South, I mean, that's a major shift. And I know
that was supposed to end. And that was supposed to end. There was supposed to be so many Northerners.
Right.
And, blue state
and just the whole Georgia-Florida piece.
That was supposed to change that. No, this was – here's what I will say about how this breaks up. This is what this breaks. The reasons why the southern states went for Donald Trump, and I would say the same in 2016 as well, were different from the reasons why people won southern states in the past. Let's just say it that way. For example, Jimmy Carter won it because he had a southern accent and was the first southerner to run for president in a million years.
Right.
Reagan and Nixon and people like that won the southern states because they were considered to be more conservative in law and order and more friendly to white America. Now I think it's a lot more that it's a lot more about economic, you know, the reasons that the rest of the country, economy, crime, things like that. I don't think the southern states can be, you know, ripped out from the rest of the country anymore. It's really just California, New York, and Illinois that can be ripped out from the rest of the country right now.
Yeah, if you look at I haven't seen it yet, but one of your favorite things must be, just like for me, is looking at the county map when it's all over.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you're gonna have a couple of blues on each coast, and the rest of the country is gonna be all red.
Yeah. You know, look, it's from a geographic standpoint. And even I, as much as I love to see that, I've always tempered that with the fact, like, look, there's a reason why there's so many people in so few counties. You know, these are places where people want to live.
Right.
and it would be great if more people wanted to live in rural America.
Right.
You know, I think that would be very good for the country. You know, it would be good for our agriculture and things like that. But, you know, we shouldn't be too smug about that if you're happy with the election result, because at the same time, a lot of your representation comes from places where not enough people want to live, or if they were born there, they don't want to stay there. So you got work to do too.
Wow, Jake Novak keeping me level-headed. I thought it would—I thought it'd be the opposite this morning. My gosh,
no,
it's probably my lack of sleep that's tossing me over the.
Yeah, I thought this for years.
How broad is the mandate? If in fact they end up Senate, House. Some people like to add the Supreme Court to that. That might be unfair, especially for those of us who, you know, speak about the history of the United States in a certain way. How broad is the mandate, in your opinion?
You know, I don't think that's the right term to use about broad. I think it's how urgent is the mandate. I think that's a better thing to say. For example, Donald Trump, now, if they take the House, you know, sure, he could introduce a new tax bill. But that's not the urgency right now. The urgency is... There's a strong mandate for an urgent addressing of the border, A. There's a strong mandate now for an urgent addressing of the situation in Israel and the Ukraine. Urgent. Those things need to be handled now. There's a strong mandate for handling inflation. I would say those are the four things, three things.
Border,
Ukraine,
border,
and Israel is one.
And locally, not locally, but here domestically, it's border, crime, and the economy. Border,
right.
crime, and
so
economy.
So I think that those are four things, because I'm going to say Ukraine and Israel are, you know, for most Americans, they're the same thing, foreign stuff. So Ukraine, Israel, the foreign, those two wars, the border, that's two. Three is inflation, and four is crime. And there's a massive, urgent, strong mandate for Donald Trump to address all of those in many, basically, on almost any way that he sees fit right now. There will be very little strength in any pushback on that. It's like, well, we have to wait. No. The American people said they want something done about this right now. It'll be a very bad mistake for the Democrats in Congress to try to slow the process of this. They can say, we want some amendments to these bills, but if they try to slow walk the bill passing process, as opposed to trying to get some provisions in there that they like, which is okay, they're gonna be beaten badly even more in 2026. This is a very dangerous time for them. And if they allow this election loss to give the regressives, the Bernie Sanders, AOCs in the party, an excuse to take over the whole party, then they'll lose this election twice.
Right.
They need to find a new coalition that's not this far-left, regressive, anti-Semitic, communist wing of the party. They're going to try to claim that they won, by the way, Nahum. They're going to try to say, well, we lost the White House, but because you didn't let us run the party. That's going to be the narrative from them for a while.
Right.
That needs to be beaten back, too.
She went too far to the center, the whole routine. Mm-hmm. Who will be the senator? Who will be the Senate Majority Leader? And do you feel bad for the current Senate Majority Leader?
No, I don't feel bad for Mitch McConnell. I think he was very helpful on the judiciary. I'm grateful for him on that. But in almost every other category, he represented the political class in the bureaucracy in Washington, which I think is a bipartisan statement to say that that was a shame. So no, I don't feel bad for him. The right now it's a three-man race apparently for Senate Majority Leader between Rick Scott from Florida, Mike Lee from Utah, and John Cornyn from Texas. I think because of the results coming out of Florida last night, where Rick Scott almost ran in tandem with Donald Trump and won a double-digit victory, and Rick Scott is closest to Donald Trump, although Mike Lee is also very close to him, I think Rick Scott has the inside track right now. And I think that for the better of the Republican Party, it would be better if Rick Scott won it, because I think Mike Lee is more of a philosophical, intellectual, pound-them-hard type of guy. I don't see him – and Rick Scott used to be a CEO of a hospital system. He's been a manager and a bringer together of different – egos and powers within an organization, a very large organization in health staff. So I think he really fits the bill. I think it should be Rick Scott, but I know that some very hardcore Trump supporters who like Rick Scott, they're not going to be unhappy with him. But some really hardcore people in the Republican Party right now who aren't really party bigwigs, they're the grassroots folks, are going to really want Mike Lee. But I think that would be a mistake. I think Rick Scott would be the best choice.
And the And are you surprised that since 1 a.m. Eastern time until now, we have not heard a word from either Harris or Biden?
No, I'm not surprised, but it is incredibly disappointing. What I am surprised by, I'm certainly not surprised that you didn't give a speech, but I'm very surprised that Kamala Harris has not made the phone call, the traditional phone call to Donald Trump, which is a private phone call. Which is, there's no crow you're really not eating crow when you make that phone call, because everyone thinks it's so great that you've made it. The fact that she hasn't made that phone call is a very bad look, especially with all the regime news media, CBS, New York Times, ABC, NBC, all calling the election for Trump.
Did Trump make the call to Biden 4 years ago?
He did make a call, and I don't think it certainly was a concession.
Right.
But if he didn't, then, you know, I'm not going to backtrack and say, oh, it's
right.
okay.
Right.
If he didn't, I think that it wasn't okay that he didn't make a phone call then either. However, that would have been on Saturday, right? Because it wasn't called for Biden until Saturday.
Right.
This was called this Wednesday morning at 3:30 a.m.
Right.
So that's the problem there. If Trump didn't make a call after Saturday, that's right. bad news.
But
I think he did.
And by 6 a.m., an hour and a half ago, everybody had called it already. That was it.
That's right.
They all agreed. Okay. I assume you heard about the rockets in Israel today. I'm assuming you heard that the airport was hit, which I think is significant. But as someone pointed out to me, when you shoot tens of thousands of rockets at Israel, you know, something's going to strike at some point. And other targets were hit, including the town up north named for Trump. So, number one, your reaction to the enemy reacting in that way. What do you think about that?
Well, it absolutely, reeks of the Hezbollah and Iran realizing that their time is limited, their funding is likely to get cut off soon. They better, you know, smoke them if you got them. You know, use them now, because as soon as Donald Trump becomes the president, and with this, and as soon as this administration decides to disengage from their very, very frantic save Hamas, save Hezbollah in some way, shape, or form policy, which is going to be soon, that's going to be the first thing that's going to happen. No one's going to put their neck out for them anymore. They may try to hurt Israel in other ways in this administration, but I don't think they're going to put their neck out for Iran so much anymore after another few days. So that's what this reeks of. It's that's a scary time, but it also helps. You know, every time they fire a massive number, one of these, it becomes easier to find out where they're coming from. So hopefully there's a silver lining there. That I think there's going to be an extensive Israeli attack within a few hours of those areas, and I hope that they are successful. So, but this reeks, Nachum, of a let's get this out now before Trump becomes president, or before the policy changes even before he becomes president.
Did you notice that he's going to be inaugurated on Martin Luther King Day?
Well, that happens every few years, right? I mean, that's right. I mean, look, but that's another story. You know, you had a record number of African Americans who voted for him, for a Republican, a record number in many states of Jews who voted for him. This is a good story. You know, one of the things I was invited on so many things, and I participated in so many forums over the last couple of weeks about the Jewish vote and how the Jews should vote. And I opened every single one of them by saying, this is a disgrace that we even have to have this conversation. As Jews in America, we shouldn't be in a place where there's so obviously a candidate in a party that's more hostile to us. It should be, it doesn't matter that we're a Jew. We're just dealing with the economy and everything else that my neighbors are dealing with. This is not a religious issue. But it became a religious issue, sadly. The good news is that you have a record number of Muslim Americans voting for a Republican for president and a record number of Jewish at the same time. What does that tell you? It tells you two things. One, that these issues were hurting all of us. And it also tells you what a horrible, horrible candidate Kamala Harris was. She lost Dearborn. She was a big loser in Dearborn, Michigan last night. No, I mean, she didn't even come in second. It was Trump. It was Jill Stein, Trump, and then Kamala. That's how she – so, I mean, honestly, that's pretty unifying. Sad that we had to get there, but nice response from a disparate group of American people.
And I wonder if she was more – or portrayed an image of being more sympathetic to the Palestinian side, so to speak. I wonder if they would have avoided the whole Jill Stein thing and in fact, voted for her in the end.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things I was advising some of the folks in the Trump campaign to say to try to bring those voters together is, if you want to stop Jews and Muslims from killing each other, vote for Trump.
Right.
You know, we're not – Jews aren't murdering Muslims, but we do sadly have to kill some of these terrorists. I mean, that's been in the news every day. Muslims are certainly killing Jews. Now, that's something you can say that's pretty parv. Who's going to – you can say that.
He sort of did say it.
Yeah, he did. That's right. I mean, I think that message – that's what I'm trying to say. I think that message came through. But what really won in the Muslim vote, which is not going to be reported by too many people, unfortunately, is the fact that Muslim Americans are almost all small business people.
Right.
They are affected very badly by inflation more than most.
Right.
And that's what really won in the Muslim vote.
Someone once said to me, if I'm not saying this in a degrading fashion. I'm also a product of immigrants to the United States who are looking,
sure,
you know, for freedom and opportunity. that if the borders of quote unquote Palestine and Israel was their number one issue, they would not be here in the United States. The reality is they want the same opportunity that everybody else wants and that everyone else, you know, tries to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, the Palestinians, when they leave Israel, do incredibly well. They've been for a long time, until the Saudi money came in there in a big way, they were the wealthiest people in Arabs in Britain, more than there. So, yeah, I mean, this is a long – I mean, if this was – and for a lot of people, I mean, it's – and that's true of the Muslim people, let alone the college campuses.
It's just shocking. And there's some major college campuses in Michigan. It's just shocking that it's a quarter of a million vote difference in the state. That's shocking.
It's incredible. Again, it just goes to listen, inflation now is 4-0 in my lifetime, in your lifetime, in killing off incumbent administrations.
Right.
I strongly believe that this is what made Watergate have the teeth that it had, because inflation was rampant in 1974. Right. Had the economy been much better, I think Nixon holds out. Right. It killed Ford, and then it killed Carter.
Right.
And now it's killed off Harris Biden.
And it killed Bush number one.
Well, it wasn't inflation. That was not such an inflationary period. That was more unemployment.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so, but you know, listen, fine.
And the tax pledge.
More, it's either 4-0 or 5-0.
Right.
It's either 4-0 or 5-0. Either way, it's undefeated.
Right.
And you never want to be an incumbent during an inflationary period. It will get you.
It will get you
no matter what.
Last two questions. And boy, I wish I, you know, I could do this all day. is it possible that he'll get to a point where he'll insist that the United States stop funding the United Nations and there could actually be a threat that the UN would have to really scale down, or you don't see him going in that direction?
He certainly has the opportunity to do so. This is his second term. He's not running again.
Right.
He doesn't have to worry about that. They own in the back of his head, how much will he be considering how this could hurt a J.D. Vance or some of these other people who went out? I mean, that's going to be the conversation tomorrow also. Who's the heir apparent? That's going to be a big discussion.
And by the way, I said to you last week, once the debate was with – once he debated Walls, all of a sudden I felt he had turned the corner, Vance, and I'm very happy with him as vice president.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I saw him coming from a long time ago, and I'm very happy. I was happy even before that.
Yeah.
So, and I'm looking at someone like J.D. Vance, and is he going to be someone who's going to gag on a defund the UN kind of thing? And my answer is no, I don't think so. I think he's going to be not only in on it to support President Trump, but he'll be in on it because he kind of thinks it's a good message for him too.
Right.
Remember where he comes from.
Right.
He doesn't come from an establishment political class. So I think that, you know, if you're asking me whether he could do it, he has more freedom to do it than any president before because he will have backing from those he needs and he doesn't have to worry about his political future. But will he do it? I think that the chances of him doing it depend on how the world responds to what he's going to do with Ukraine and with Israel. If Donald Trump's plans to end the situation in Ukraine and to improve the situation for Israel are not met, or are met, if they are met with significant pushback from the EU and the UN, then they're in for it. Then he is going to say, like, that's it, we're out. If they're smart enough to go along with what he wants to do, then I think he'll let that sleeping dog lie.
I see Lawler won, and I see Tom Kane won. And Kane actually won by 6 points, so 7 points, so more significant. That race was not nearly as close as people thought it was.
Yeah, my congressional race here in my district with Anthony D'Esposito looks like he's going to lose.
What's he down by, like 6,000 votes?
Sure. He's down by about 6,000 votes. I don't think it's a definite yet. That was completely because of the abortion issue, which they frightened people into thinking was an issue in this election. In reality, it was not. And we saw that nationally. But my district
and threat to and threat to democracy ended up not being much of an issue, huh?
That's right. Well, you know, one of the things I posted before 3:30, when I just felt like this was done, was next. And this was the statement I made: next time the Democrats might want to try democracy.
Right.
You might want to try it. It would have done you much better in 2016. It would have done you much better in 2020 as well, because you wouldn't have been straddled with a candidate who you just barely got over the finish line and then you needed to replace much earlier than you did.
Right.
And it certainly would have gotten you a better candidate this time.
And now, Jake Novak, for this audience, maybe the most important question I'll ask you this morning, and this will be my final question. Is it possible that we don't have to wait until January the 20th for him to start making this effort? Is it possible that as president-elect, Donald Trump could implement a strategy that would bring our hostages home?
Absolutely, 100%. There's precedent for this, Nahum. Dwight Eisenhower promised through the 1952 election that made him president for the first time that he would go to Korea and solve that problem. He did not wait to take the oath of office to do so. He went to Korea. And within 2 months of his taking the oath of office, the Korean War was over. So absolutely, there's precedent for this. He should do it. I think he'd be safer out of the country than in for a while, for one thing. And honestly, he should personally go. He should personally go. He doesn't necessarily have to go to Israel or Gaza, but he should personally go to maybe Riyadh, maybe Cairo, and say, I am now asking you guys to get off the ball and do something about this. I would prefer him also to go to Israel, but I'm just saying I think that isn't absolutely 100% necessary. But he should do an Eisenhower and do this as president-elect within the next 6 weeks. I absolutely agree with you.
And,
yes,
and
absolutely.
I know there's no such thing as a foolproof strategy, but you would say that there's a very good chance that an effort like that would result in the release of the hostages.
Yes, he has to make it clear to the Iran that as bad as it was during his first term for them, he will make sure that anything that he should basically say, I was holding back Israel on a few things, including knocking off some of your top people. I will not do that anymore.
What about nuclear? What about nuclear facilities?
That's right. Stuff like that. And that as well. And he should.
So it's a real threat.
Iran should make a real threat.
Iran will be under a serious threat that Israel might take an action like that.
Yeah. I mean, he should tweet out or post out something that Teddy Roosevelt put in a telegram over 120 years ago, was when there was an American citizen taken hostage in Libya. Actually, he turned out not to be an American citizen, but Teddy thought he was. And he said, you know, the guy's name, he had a very difficult name, so I'll just say, like, he said, he sent a telegram to the king there, said, you know, American returned or you dead. Wow. Donald Trump should do the equivalent of that. Hostages returned or Khamenei dead. That should be his tweet in the next couple of days. That will be very effective. Very effective.
Amazing. There's a lot of hope out there, a lot of hope out there. And by the way, any when will we know what the national Jewish vote was? When will we know that statistic?
Never. I don't trust exit polls that on religion, let alone.
So what's your guess? So you think the Jewish vote was around what?
The number that we saw out of New York last night is close to being accurate. They had 43% of the Jewish vote. I think it was a little higher than that. But
New York State had 43% of the Jewish vote.
New York State, 43% of the Jewish vote. So that tells me that New Jersey was higher. That tells me that Pennsylvania was definitely higher. But here's what we can say definitively. Here's what we know now. We won't have to wait. This was not only the biggest Jewish vote for a Republican presidential candidate since 1980. A lot of people were saying it because Reagan got about 40%
right.
in 1980. Actually, it's the biggest Jewish vote for a Republican candidate since 1928. Because as soon as FDR turned, the Jewish vote in America was Republican until FDR ran in 1932. That was when things turned. My great-great-grandfather was a Republican delegate to the 1924 convention and was a Republican elected politician in Chicago.
In what city was that convention?
That convention was in Chicago as well. That's when things turned.
Because my next question was, how did he travel to the convention? But now you ruined it for me.
Yeah. This is a 1928 event, and some Jewish historians and community people will begin to understand that. I stand firm on just reminding all your listeners, any exact number that you get nationwide should be looked at. Be satisfied with the fact, indisputable fact that this is the highest number right. for a Jew.
Whether it's in the 40s, in the 40s yeah. or 50s, wherever it is.
Yeah. Just,
right. That's it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Jake Novak, can't thank you enough.
My pleasure. I am very happy this morning. I think that this is a time of hope. We don't put our trust in human beings in any way, in 100% way. But this is as good as we could have resulted.
My message yesterday to everybody, in addition to remember to vote, was that we have to remember as faith-based individuals who the real president of the United States is.
That's right.
And that's, of course, the one above. It doesn't mean we don't need to fight for what we think is right or, make an effort for what we think would be best. But we have to remember that he now can take this leader and take him in any direction he wants.
That's right. And that's the most important reason to remember that. But from a mental health standpoint, if you remember that, then you'll never be too disappointed.
Right.
I mean, the thing that always gets me worried is when I see anyone worshiping, even if it's the candidate that I really like,
right.
when I see worshipful words coming from anybody about a candidate, I get really worried. What I'm thinking. It's bad news.
Well, that's what led to, people sitting shiva after Hillary lost,
Oh, yeah.
That's what happens.
People talking about Obama like he was a god.
Right.
And the number one delusion in America is that people believe that celebrities and politicians, they believe that they know them. They talk about them both lovingly and hatefully as if they knew them. You don't know them. You don't know Donald Trump personally. And don't call me and say I shook his hand once. No, you don't know him. You don't know Jennifer Lopez. You don't know Taylor Swift. You don't know them. Stop talking and acting as if you know these people. You do not know them. And that, by the way, you are free. You are freer as a human being for not knowing them. Move along. You know yourself and know your family and look at what they do. I don't want to live in a country where words mean more than actions. And we've been going in that direction for a long time. Stop paying attention to what people say. especially if you don't know them, and look at what they do. And if you look at what I think Donald Trump did as president and what he will do now, you will be less, even if you're a far left person, I think you'll be less less disturbed.
Well said, Mr. Novak. Thank you so, so much.
All right. My pleasure. Have a great week, the rest of the week.
You as well. Jake Novak, brilliant commentator. There it is. There's what I've been waiting for now for months, a half hour with Jake or more, 40 minutes with Jake to talk about the election results from last night. And yes, let us hope, in fact, that the leaders of the United States, leaders of Israel, are guided, are able to carry out God's will and do what's best for what God feels is best for the Jewish people and for the free world, for those who care about life, for those who have respect for other human beings, for those who acknowledge that we are all created in the image of God.